Bill Saunders.
Would you like to read the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I move for adjournment?
All in favor?
Okay, we got a second. Okay, thank you, folks. I like these 60-second meetings.
They're refreshing, aren't they?
Don't get much done, but...
Okay, has everyone had a chance to read the minutes from last meeting?
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes as presented.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Carry. So we're already to number five. Keep it going at this rate, we'll be done in 2 minutes.
Amen. All right, well, number five is an update on the Lapine Transportation System plan. And I believe this is our third bout or fourth bout of the transportation plan. And interestingly, we're also going to provide this presentation again on Friday morning at the Chamber Breakfast. And you're all welcome to attend. We thought it'd be important that we have a wider audience than just those who attend here. And then Joe and I are talking about having the town hall meeting in March sometime, maybe at the event center.
Sure.
One of the reasons that we wouldn't have a town hall meeting here is that the concrete out front is heaved, and so I can't use this door. So the fire marshal's come along and said I can only have 29 people in this building until such times as I get that sidewalk fixed. And I'm not going to fix the sidewalk until springtime. And we're not going to mess with the door either because it's not the door's fault.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So Joe, you're on.
All right. Well, thanks for having us back. So real quickly today, Matt's not here with us. I've got Ashley Griffin, who's one of our firm's newest employees, started last Monday. So she's going to help me out today. And I don't know if you guys all received the announcement from the website, but we have that draft document that includes these graphics and a few others that's available online. I doubt you guys had time to download that in your busy schedules, but this is really the highlight of that. And there's a PowerPoint presentation we prepared, but I'm just going to forego that because really this is the meat. This is what I want to talk about. As you look at this, these graphics are, consider this a straw man. You know, this is my best guess to get us to have this discussion, to get us to move it forward. This isn't perfect, so please don't pretend this is perfect. I'm hoping that you guys can help us to tear this apart and build it back up into something that will be perfect, and perfect means for City of Lapine. So in this document, there's a few different maps. There's a map of a vehicle roadway network plan. There's a pedestrian plan, a transit service area, a freight route plan, all kinds of different information. And what I'm looking for from you guys is, and we're going to go through all these individually, what I'm looking for from you guys is to eventually be able to put your name on a drawing and give us comments, give us the feedback, mark things up, change lines, tell us, hey, this could be better if you did this, or whatever those edits and comments might be. And so real quick too, just looking around the room, we've got Scott Eichhoff here from COIC, so we're going to put him on the spot a little bit later to talk about transit. He's actually working on a regional park and ride location study. And so that's going to be one of the pieces we want to fill in with this and make sure that our efforts and his match. We've got Tom Headley, so we've got some good civil engineering experience here in the room to help us out. And of course, Ken and Deborah as well. So I think the best place to start is the first 11 by 17 figure you've got. So the first big color map. And this is a quick overview from our last meeting. This is what we said where the city needs in Lapine. You know, and so you see a lot of things. There's congestion on the highway. There's safety issues on Highway 97. There's the speed transition areas both on Huntington Road and on 97, kind of the north and south edges of the downtown. There's some of the rail crossing Wikiup plans and kind of what's going on over there. We know those Wikiup overcrossing plans are going to impact the existing park and ride facility we have there at the intersection. So we know we're going to probably have to look at where we can relocate that to.
11.
But this is really the needs. This is kind of where we ended last time, saying, you know, we're going to try and develop a plan that addresses and solves these issues. So any question on this graphic since our last meeting? Any further thoughts?
Just a question for you, Joe.
Yeah.
On Friday, is this what we intend to end up?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay. All right. Well, let me know which thing.
Yeah.
Because we do want to give them some mass. I found that people really like this.
Yes. And these are, I really appreciate all the work you do because this is really easy to.
I think the change I might make for the chamber breakfast is maybe taking out some of the tables. You guys have a little bit more detail in here. And I think having a sheet that better highlights, you know, what the process is. You guys are already three meetings in. You kind of know where we're at and where we're going with this. But I think to a group of people that haven't seen anything, I'd want to say, hey, here is a transportation system plan. This is what we're trying to accomplish. Here is the website. Here's how you can download these documents and get more information. Here's how you can help us. So I might change some little things, but I think we'll be along these same lines.
And I just might note too that one of these maps here you have is is called the functional classification map, and that's really an important map. And I was talking to the mayor about it yesterday, and that is one of our goals is to knock down barriers around our city to, you know, to access them. And access them particularly from Highway 97. And so there's all kinds of closed routes that help facilitate movement around the city. But you folks live here, and I'm sure we've missed something. And so I have you envision where there might be roads in our cities and what kind of roads those might be that might help with traffic movement. Because as you know, we've got disconnect between east and west. We've got disconnect between north and south. And at some point we need to reconcile that. And the best way to do that is to have a transportation system, a grid system that works. So look this map over particularly and let us know what's missing there. I'd appreciate it greatly. And I talked to Mayor yesterday, and he was going to look at whether or not we had sufficient access up in the Wikiup Junction area, or we needed some additional routes up there. So look it over and let us know.
Yes, let me give you a quick overview of that map. That probably is the most important map in your handout. So it's also called Figure 1. It's the first figure that says draft. Red, green, and blue lines on it. So I guess first and foremost, what we're thinking in Lapine is we need to develop a functional classification system. Right now, Deschutes County has had a classification system in Lapine. That's kind of null and void now that the city is its own entity. There's a lot of different ways you can approach that. So generally, just for background, an arterial, those are your main roads. Those are just like with the arteries in your body, they carry the most traffic, the most volume. It's a mobility function. Then you have your collector streets. They collect traffic, they bring it to those arterials, they have more access, so a little bit more friction on the sides. And then you've got local streets. Local streets are, you know, what you back up your car onto from your house. There's a lot of different ways you can do that. A lot of agencies subdivide those into major and minor and different classifications. They might have industrial streets, they might have commercial streets. You know, I talked to Steve and Devin and Deborah, and my thought was, you know, here in Lapine, we don't have five-lane roads, and we don't really have a need for five-lane roads. So we can keep this pretty simple and just say collector, arterial, and local. You know, we can keep it in those three categories. But what we want to do is have a lot of flexibility within that. That can adapt to the right-of-way constraints, the natural and man-made obstacles that you might have. So basically take it more to a functional purpose rather than a prescribed one. again, some agencies, they might have 20 different cross-section standards. They might have a cross-section for, you know, the collector next to the industrial park, the collector next to the commercial area, the collector next to, you name it, the one-way, the two-way, the, you know, you start getting into this very, very defined set of standards, but even with 20, 30, 40 standards, you still don't have the flexibility you need to really adapt to what's on the ground. And that's what we want to do. We want to have a system that's flexible. So if we talk about sidewalks, you know, it might be a certain dimension. The intent of that dimension is to have that much clear space for people to walk. So whether that sidewalk's 8 feet and it has the pole 2 feet in, you've still got 6 feet. So that's really what we want to try and accomplish with this plan. So if you look at this big map again, and if you can in your mind just look at the green lines, you know, that's really the spine that we're trying to develop through the city of Lapine. So it's the Burgess, the Huntington connections that come down, and there's a loop in the downtown core that goes both east and west of the highway. The location of that loop is really important because if you remember back to our US 97 corridor plan, we're looking at a new traffic signal at 1st and 97. My understanding from Gary is that that's a fully funded project right now. They're still working out some of the legalities of some of the money from the county. But it's important to have that loop go to a place where we have the high capacity on the highway. Finley Butte and Morrison is the south end of that connection. That's another location that, you know, right now we don't have the money for it, but it's identified as a future traffic signal. So if you think of this loop in the downtown core that serves the industrial lands on the east side, you're going to have the trucks, you're going to have the growth over there. You know, that property now has these two routes that have access to the highway at a traffic signal. That's the long-term plan. What we're trying to figure out still is really how Huntington Road fits into this. So right now, Huntington Road, south of Finley View, comes in right next to the highway, way too close. So if we were to put that signal, if we were to realign Morrison Street and Finley View as one intersection with the highway, we were to put a traffic signal there, that intersection with Huntington is just too close to get cars to stack up without blocking that. So we know we need to do something different with Huntington Road. We really see two options. And you can see those in dashed lines on this map. One option is you kind of snake it through the existing development over there and you bring it out a little bit further. You know, and that helps. But it's tough because you're talking about a somewhat built urban environment. The other option is you take Huntington further out east and you connect it up Hinkle Way and you make this larger spine on the east side of the city that has a little bit better connectivity. And maybe there's another option you guys can think of that I haven't. So, you know, that's one issue that we're struggling with there. So any questions kind of on that arterial system that we're thinking? So why are those arterials different than collectors? Well, if you're a developer and you have frontage on a collector and an arterial, for example, we would want you to have access to your property from the collector. So we want to try and reduce the number of driveways on those arterial roadways. We want to keep those for throughput. So on the collector system, there's another grid. Steve talked about the Wickiup Junction area east of the highway and how we're going to serve those properties. So right now we have a frontage system that kind of goes up near Les Schwab and just kind of dies out over there. And then you have a number of driveways on the highway. We know that's not ideal. We know we want to look at changing that. You know, my thought on this map is really improve Drafter Road. You know, try and use Drafter Road kind of as that package system. See if we can pull the access to those businesses from a Drafter Road, and, you know, versus having those direct accesses ultimately going onto the highway. Mm-hmm. We've got this big plan for the Wickiup overcrossing. You know, it's a good plan. It'll help grade separate the rail, which we know is a problem today. But the challenge is Roslyn Road, and we identified that in the needs graphic. We don't have a good solution for Roslyn Road, and you can't build another interchange right next to the one we just built. So our thought on this map is, well, if you look at this connection that goes from Roslyn Road all the way down to Reed Road, you've got all these truck stops, you've got all these trucks in here, these are your slowest moving vehicles, cars have just come over this new overcrossing, they no longer have to stop for the train tracks, so maybe speeds are even picking up there, you know, and then you stop right there where the trucks are. So if we can get this new connection that comes down, you know, here's another way for us to circulate. Is that a city priority? Is that something you want to go out and build in year two? Probably not. But long term, how do we preserve that right-of-way? How do we keep that as an option and avoid encroaching on that right-of-way with development? Now, is that alignment exactly here? No, this is a line on the map. We can move it around. The important thing is we want that connection. We want that north-south connection So we've got Huntington Road kind of serving as the west side connection between Wickiup and Lapine, and we've got this new parallel alignment to Darlene Way on the east side. The other thing I heard from Ken, I think it was two meetings ago now, was talking about the rodeo and the fairgrounds and how we're gonna accommodate that development west of 6th Street. And it's a little bit challenging because right now it's not in our city limits, it's not in our UGB. So what we're thinking though is, and going back a little further, we even know that US 97 and 6th Street has its own set of challenges. And while it's great that we have this plan to align Morrison Street and Finley Butte, that doesn't solve 6th Street. It might make some bigger gaps in traffic from the traffic signal, but it doesn't really solve it. Our thought on 6th Street is also to look at kind of that system approach. You know, and what we're looking at is how can we take that 3rd Street connection and really utilize that. So my thought was, you know, if you're going to the fairgrounds, if you're going west, it's pretty easy to come down 97, turn on 6th Street, and get out. The problem is when you're leaving that fairground site, and if it's a big crowd and there's an event going on and everyone leaves at once, making those left turns from 6th to head back north on 97 is a real challenge. So if we can build this system where 3rd Street connects us back into our arterial loop, that arterial loop connects us back to our traffic signal at 1st, we can solve that left turn problem by giving people a different option. Now the challenge we're looking at is if you go down 3rd Street, it kind of loops around, there's some real steep corners, real narrow roads as you connect back over to 6th Street. And what I'm thinking is maybe if we have a direct connection from 3rd all the way over to Pengra, bring Pengra down to 6th, you know, make that the option, or maybe it's extending Walker down so it connects straight through. The neat opportunity I think that might exist there is if we have that new connection, if we have that better, more direct grid system, we can use the existing pavement, the existing alignment, maybe for a bicycle way or a trail. And there's a lot of recreational bicyclists that do use those facilities today. So that's a lot of what's on this map. Those are some of my thoughts to try and get this conversation started. Oh, one other comment that I'm overlooking. Talking to Steve, we have all this county land between the Wickiup and the downtown core area. That's all been master planned. There's different roadway alignments that are identified going through there, and that's in our current comprehensive plan. One of the things we want to do is make sure that we don't preclude the ability to have another connection east-west between Huntington and 97 over there. We know we want a frontage road on 97, and that's probably something that needs to be added to this map so that we don't have more driveways that go onto the highway. But we want to make sure we also preserve those corridors, those east-west corridors, so that development doesn't encroach into those and that we don't preclude that opportunity in the future.
Joey, you want to talk a little bit about local streets and their role in the system and how we plan for those or don't plan for those?
There is a few local street connections shown on here. The transportation system plan is generally focused on the collector and arterial network. It's the higher order roads. It's really the spine of your network. Without a good local street system and a good local street grid, though, you're going to put a lot more reliance on those collectors and arterials. We want a local street system for pedestrian connectivity, for bicycle connectivity. There's some real important connections we see in Lapine that are missing, and I have those identified here in dashed lines as well. Second Street, Steve and I were talking about, is one of those connections. You know, if we can better serve the park and some of the uses that are right along Second Street, you know, right now we kind of have that gravel area, there's a dirt alignment. You know, getting that to be part of that local system, I think is going to help. Over by, I'm not sure how the street name works, but just east of McDonald's and the hotel, we've got that alignment. And Steve, I don't know if that's a private alignment or if that's actually a public right-of-way at this point. But trying to get some connection between there to the south, I think is also going to be pretty important.
And we're talking about that little frontage road that's there mm-hmm. in front of the Kia station and stuff?
I was talking about the one by McDonald's and Subway that passes right behind the hotel.
Starts. I think that's probably private, but I'm not sure it's private.
Yeah. But I think getting some type of alignment that comes, you know, in that vicinity, some type of a local street that connects us back down.
Only got the hotel on it.
You know, the other thing is about a third of our streets, or at least a quarter of our streets, aren't even streets. You know, just somebody went out and punched a road through at some point, and everybody started using it, because they'd never been surveyed. There was no deeds, did not have reporting. So one of the goals that I'm suggesting for this year is that we take one of these streets and we go through the exercise of making it public. And I'm suggesting the one that's in front of Finley Butte Park. Because it's a dirt road and everybody uses it to access the public park, but it's not a real world. And we got so much to do here, it's just amazing. Look at that.
One of the things that we want to be careful about is not mapping out where those local streets are, because we want the city to be as flexible in the future about how, if a development comes in and wants to look at various different alignments associated with topography challenges or what they want their neighborhood to accomplish. But we can get at that is through our development code. So that gives us some sense of what, how we want local streets to look and feel and how frequent the connections are and what type of facilities are provided for pedestrians and cyclists. But we don't want to go in. I think some of the failings of very early TSPs is people try to be very prescriptive about where those local streets are, and then when somebody came in, they said, well, I can't possibly build these local streets. So we try to just focus on the collector and arterial system to provide that backbone, and then let the code help guide as development comes in for the local street system.
I tell you, a functionally classified roadmap is a real helpful thing, because the developer comes in and you tell them, you know, they need to dedicate some right-of-way for alignment, and they'll start arguing with you. But if you got a map and it's adopted, you can show it to them, then you usually don't have any trouble with it. And so that's another reason we have for having a map that shows where we intend to have circulation in our city. So as to lessen the argument that, you know, I can't put that road in, or where'd you come up with that idea, or, you know, it's a shakedown cruise.
If you now go, it's called page 4, I might be taking you a little bit out of order, but it has the three different cross sections here. Collector, arterial, local street cross section. So this gets to Steve's point. You know, this is the right-of-way that we're talking about. You know, if you have this arterial, these are the general dimensions that we're looking at for these roads. And we certainly recognize there might be some differences. City of Lapine might not want sidewalks with a curb. You might want a swale between the road and the sidewalk system. And that's fine. The important thing that we're trying to show here is some draft dimensions to look at. And these dimensions are based on ODOT's current Oregon pedestrian and bicycle design guide. Did you guys find that? By that drawing?
Pedestrian?
Oh no, this one right here.
It's based on page 4, probably taking it out of order.
There it is.
Sorry.
Oh, no problem. You got your dinner, Doug?
I have a big question for you.
Yes. I'm ready.
Okay, on this second map here.
Okay.
You already know the Kegel subdivision.
Okay.
You've got penciled in here a collector extension.
Yeah.
Running east and west from Huntington to Railroad Street. Is that a proposed street or a bicycle lane, or what is it?
Yeah.
And I noticed on this other map you've got it listed as a proposed bicycle lane.
Yeah.
So
right now, when we're looking at the Kegel subdivision, we've got these real large blocks, and it's fully developed. Don't get me wrong, there isn't room today to go in there and punch a road through the Kegel neighborhood. Our thought is, if that area were to redevelop, we can start to look at getting that right-of-way, so ultimately we can make that east-west connection, and we can have a better grid system in that area.
Well, those are all homes in there. How are you,
they are today.
How are you going to go in there and take away somebody's property and put in a bicycle path?
Well, Doug, as a matter of fact, that goes right through your house.
No, I'm a little farther north. I would expect a rather large check if it could.
It will be. I'm at about $1,200,
$1,500. Oh, I'm large. rolling here.
I think the thing to keep in mind too, Doug, is when we're looking at this plan, you know, this is a 20-year plan. Let's say someone came in here and gave you a check for $1 million to buy your house out because they wanted to make this the site of a future whatever park. What we want to say as a city is we want more connection. We want to have the connectivity in here so people can get between these different areas. But you're right. I mean, today, that connection wouldn't make sense.
Well, the longer you go, the more it's going to build up. And I just don't see how it's feasible to go through somebody's backyard or the street.
Yeah.
When you get sewer water in there, you open it up for for smaller lots with more houses on the lot. So,
you know. Well, only if the owner can subdivide his own lot. Every lot in there, except for one, is an acre.
Yeah.
And one is the lot next to me is an acre to third. The rest of them are all 1 acre.
So you end up with probably 4 to 8 houses on that acre with sewer and water, if we were able to subdivide.
And the other thing is that street alignment may offset from each block. I mean, just go over and offset. And, you know, again, so we're not going through people's houses, but trying to, within reason, get a transportation corridor. And one of the reasons why is you got really long blocks. And so it's really hard for people to have connectivity with one another, because if you live on one of these blocks and you want to visit your neighbor over on the other side of the block, you may have to go all the way around, you know, a mile just to talk to your neighbor, or drive over to your neighbor on the other side. Whereas if we bust that up, we have shorter blocks, we have more access, more interaction, more interface, more strength of community. And I think that's the real goal there, is to help create a sense of community by virtue of how long your block lengths are.
Joe, I think Doug raises an excellent point, which is when we're communicating this map to folks that aren't familiar with it, and even when we develop the transportation system plan, future roads like this that are in existing neighborhoods or traverse through existing neighborhoods, it's really important to note that those connections will only occur as development or redevelopment occurs, so that we don't unnecessarily alarm people that Steve's going to come through with a bulldozer tomorrow. This is a long-term, again, communicating this is a long-term plan and setting up for this can happen as redevelopment occurs for here, but we're not going to punch through the existing neighborhood. But this is what, again, this functional class map is really intended to tell us, how do we want our facilities to look and feel if we put ourselves 20 years in the future? And there may be a series of steps that get us there, but we want to have that visionary mindset rather than just look at what today's constraints are.
Yeah, a couple of things that you were saying. Yeah. That little road where McDonald's is,
right.
That's just an access road from McDonald's and the Shell station and the Best Western. That's all that's for.
Got it.
The other thing, too, is you were saying that you're going to have to move the transit stop because of the overpass. If you look at the map, the overpass is on the other side.
I think the way they're configuring the ramps, I thought it was changing the access and the overall location. And Scott, maybe you know more about that than I do.
They're sticking with this map.
Yeah.
The concern wasn't that the site itself would, you know, go away or whatever. The concern was the access to the company site and the ability to meet times in terms of we have schedules, right, to get back to Bend on time and meet them with the local Bend routes, et cetera, et cetera. So what we just wanted, our feedback to Steve on that project was, we're just hoping that a request was that ODOT take a look at this issue and try to work with us to figure out if there'd be another location that we could put that parking ride light. And that's not obviously not just for transit. It's mainly used, I think, for carpooling. But we also, that's our main pickup as well. And I, you know, just as a note, the goals that I saw in here, the table 6 transit improvement needs, they all make sense to me. In fact, they're the specific things I was thinking about on my way down here.
Good.
One, excuse me, you know, whether or not it's feasible to relocate the Wikia parking ride facility. You know, folks, I think know that we provide shuttles to Bend, and then we have local service. Mm-hmm. So folks can take the local service to this facility, but most folks, particularly folks that are coming down here, they don't think about that ahead of time, and they have to call a day ahead to reserve that local ride. So my thinking on the way down here is it would be really nice if we opened up another stop farther south here and more in the core. Mm-hmm. And that would make people not even have to use the local system potentially. So I agree with that.
Don't we have the one across the street?
We don't use it anymore. Yeah, not for since, I can't remember when Karen stopped. Last summer maybe?
Oh, okay.
I think so.
And again, we have the local system that can connect you from not just within Lapine, but an area about the same size as Lapine outside the city limits. But that's not so convenient for folks. And if someone just needs to come down here and go, you know, to one of the businesses or facilities kind of in the core here, they don't necessarily need the local system. So I would like to figure out a way to get another stop back down here or whatever makes sense. And then the increased service hours, yeah.
Right. What is there, four trips total?
I think it's four round trips, and we used to have maybe six.
Yep.
And, you know, we're actually been quite stable on federal funding. It's been the local funding that the last 2 years, we've lost a lot of. So when we did our service cuts, we cut the things that were being used the least. And that early morning and that, I think it was a later evening, shuttle got removed. And folks went back, of course. But that's a funding question, I think, more than it is a planning question.
Yeah. So have you seen anything to suggest the need for a park and ride in the core? Because my sense was probably just having a stop down here.
I think it's just a stop. I don't think you need all the space for a park and ride necessarily. Yeah. I think folks, if we had a stop, folks wouldn't inevitably use it a bit as a park and ride.
Sure.
But that northern, if we could find another one in Whittier that collects, you know, road and people from farther north, or even a little bit north of there, could come backtrack just a bit mm-hmm. to park. It's more functional as a park and ride lot out there than somewhere down in the core.
Right.
But it would be nice to have an enhanced stop down here with some mm-hmm. shelters.
Yep.
You have harsh winters and to get some, you know, something for folks to get out of the cold if they need it.
That's a good point. Thanks. Here in the regional park and ride relocation study, I just got the email from you about the meeting. I think it's mm-hmm. later this week even, or next week.
2 weeks out.
Okay. But what kind of status, time frame are we on for identifying those regional sites?
Yeah, we're doing a region-wide, and that means all of ODOT Region 4, so California to Columbia, park and ride lot study. And it's basically just trying to create some priorities for where we should we upgrade existing park and ride lots or locate new ones. And we are right now working on all the demand estimates for what is the demand now, what is it going to be. And so I think in March we're doing the prioritization process. Again, it's a big area. But the, you know, what was interesting to me, and you guys may already know this, is when we looked up the data, there's actually more folks commuting south from Bend to Lapine than from Lapine to Bend, just in whole numbers.
Hmm.
It's obviously a bigger percentage of the Lapine residents commute north than the Bend resident, but the whole numbers is actually about twice as many are commuting south as are commuting north. And but all that said, there's a higher percentage of folks in the Lapine area, and I don't mean just the city, but even, you know, broader area, that depend on carpooling or vanpooling or transit to get to work. So we see it as, you know, the north end of Lapine somewhere as a high priority for the region. There is a well-functioning park and ride lot right now. It's just the question is, what happens with this whole realignment thing? And I don't know. And I don't know what, if any, opportunities there are. If there's other ODOT. Is that site owned by ODOT or the county? Or
which one is it?
It's an existing park and ride lot at Burgess.
And it's some government agency owns it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's ODOT. But, you know, could they make do they have other space that would make sense, considering that again, I can't remember exactly how the access is going to work northbound and southbound from there, but it's going to be...
It's a little tricky.
Yeah, a little bit. And maybe we analyze it and drive it and we say, okay, it only adds 3 minutes, that's fine.
And on that side of the highway, I think you have much better connectivity than if you were on the other side of the highway. So I think the side it's on is the correct side. We might want to even look at the trails and the connectivity and really how it ties back in with everything else around there when we start making these changes. But yeah, my sense like yours is, you know, it might not be in a bad spot.
No, I don't think it would either.
Except.
And then the only thing is like she brought up is that we have one down south end.
Right.
To take care of the people down here.
Yeah.
You know, you already got one that's north end to take care of Cable and anybody else out in that area on Long Burgess. As far as on the east side of 97, there's very little people there. Most of everything is on the west side. Uh-huh. So that one there would take care of all that northern part. And then have one down here take care of this part.
I would like you to see if you can't have something with some parking. Because if you've got a lot of people in our core inner city area, maybe they can't always walk there, and if they're elderly, they need a place to park their car to take. So I'm not saying they need a Walmart parking lot, but...
No matter what, whenever we have a shuttle stop, anywhere in the region that we provide shuttles, folks drive and park there, even if it's designated or not. You know, they're on the side of the road or whatever.
But this is next to the sheriff. We don't want to get a ticket.
That's what I mean. Whatever stuff we develop for the more of the core area here, it needs to have some kind of parking.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just to deal with that issue.
On the latest map for the Wickiup interchange, that park and ride is moved across Burgess, moved south.
That's on the
they've only got about six different maps, but on the latest one, it's moved to the south.
Look at that. I know there's just a bare land there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Still on the west side of 97,
just south of Burgess River. Yeah, I mean, again, what our balance is for access, part of it's can the bus maneuver, and this I'm not worried about that. But then there's time.
Yep.
And the amount of time to get in it. You know, it's a regional system, so everything's timed to other places as well, so that connections and transfers can be made. And so I would just want to get a better feel for how long it's going to take to get there coming from the north and then get back on and then vice versa. So
yeah, it's a good point. And just looking at the map and thinking about this, I mean there might be some opportunities going down Huntington Road. I was actually wondering too if we had the parking, if there was some benefit of having, you know, more downtown parking, especially as we keep making changes to access and the parking that currently exists along 97. You know, maybe there's some other opportunities we could provide through a facility like that. And I was also wondering, Scott, I think given the weather we have in Lapine, I think there's probably a higher propensity to take transit during the winter months.
Yes.
So if we're thinking of increasing service, but we have limited funding, maybe we could prioritize that during the winter months when it's harder to travel. Maybe there's some way to look at those trends.
Yeah, we can get ride data month by month. And it's also, we can also do some of the local, we're working on that right now.
Nice.
So where the origin destination data for the local travel, so you can get a better feel for how people are using it to connect to the shuttle or just locally.
Right.
And it does, I mean, obviously this tends to be seniors, people with disabilities, and then working folks, people going to COCC. Tends to be a little lower income. That's who we serve.
I was actually wondering if it would be helpful for this group too to give you ideas on if there was a stop or a park and ride, where that location. My thought was somewhere around 4th, somewhere more central than 6th Street, so that people could get there more easily from all sides of the city. But I'd be curious to hear your thoughts and input on that too.
No, I'm talking with 4th Street. The only place, it's just an empty lot. There's no place else to park.
It is today.
That's the only problem.
Yeah.
The other thing was on 6th Street IKEA, which you can line it up with them, if you have to take care of this left turn, because then you have a traffic light right there.
I've heard that idea too, and I obviously we're aware of the issues that are there, and that's a good option
as they have in mind that option.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't interfere too much with any private property up there.
Right.
Right over here.
Right. Yep.
I think there's only one piece of private property.
Is that it?
One.
And you have to realign the line, Penn Butte, just have that little curve.
Yep.
But realign it straight to 6th Street. You have one straight through, and that takes care of 6th Street, Finley Butte, Morrison, and everything except one traffic light. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Title in?
Yep.
So another map, it's called Figure 2, and it talks about the pedestrian system in here. So generally, these lines follow the roadway network. But what I want to highlight is kind of what's in the downtown core. So we worked with Steve to do an ODOT. I'm trying to think what the acronym stands for. It's the STIP grant, Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, to look at some different treatments. One is sidewalks on the west side of 97. The second component is having some of these enhanced pedestrian crossings on the highway. So we know there's going to be a signal at first in 97. So we're going to have a pedestrian push button, we're going to have ramps. It's going to make it a lot easier to cross the street there at that real critical location. Again, Finley Butte and Morrison Street, that's a future traffic signal location too. But there's a lot of other locations in between there where we were thinking, if we could do some of those rapid rectangular flashing beacons, like see on the parkway in Bend, where you have the push button, the lights flash, and then the cars yield to pedestrians, some of those crossings to really open up the pedestrian system east-west and take down some of the barriers that the highway creates would be helpful. So that's,
we need better policing because they're running down people in front of our building every day, and it's the only flashing light in town.
Well, and the problem with those flashing lights that just flashes, people just ignore them. But when you have a light that strobes like a police light, and it's only when someone's there, then when you see it, you really pay attention. It really grabs your attention.
Do they have a horn that blows too for when those lights go on there and then? Somebody told me
no.
They
did. No, the neighbors wouldn't like that.
They get perturbed.
Yeah.
Then we couldn't be the first one.
We could. Sirens.
Yeah, well, I sit right there. It'll wake me up.
we're planning to be first in so many different features, so that could be one more.
Joe, a couple things is I think it's important to keep in mind, notwithstanding the fact that we're talking about 20 years, I think it's important to keep in mind the fact that one of the tenets of this city's incorporation was small town feel. You know, we talk about putting roads across, cutting the Cagle, Burgess. Those people bought in there, and the people are in this community because they wanted 1-acre lots, and they're not disturbed by the lack of connectivity.
Yeah.
And then I'll go over to this figure two, where we see the blue lines representing future sidewalk networks. There's been a great deal of community input and collaborative efforts to bring forth the idea that we don't want sidewalks. And just the idea of seeing them running all the way down the and granted, we're talking about not necessarily sidewalks, but pathways and
everything. Right.
So, and it was mentioned about being very careful because the community is going to be sensitive to anything they see, and I can guarantee you that there'll be an uproar when people start looking at maps that show new roads because they don't have the grasp of what this all means, like the public works and the city itself, and the time frame of 20 years.
Right.
So, I want everybody to be cautioned here about jumping into an idea of changing the small town feel and really bringing this into a full-fledged city that's got sidewalks everywhere and
part of our
all of that.
Part of our requirements for a transportation system plan, and we've got to follow the statutes as well, the Oregon Administrative Rules is really working on accessibility and multimodal. That's some of the things that we're tasked to implement. So
I think, Joe, there's a, maybe I'll help you out here. There's a balance between small-time values, but there's also, when we were on our way down here, we were driving down Huntington Road, and there was a family pushing a stroller along Huntington. And so if you think about future generation, Huntington is a pretty high-speed facility. And so here was this family along the side of the road pushing their stroller, and I don't think anyone's going to argue that they don't want, you don't want to create a small-town environment that is safe for people to push their families around, for kids to ride their bikes. And so how do we, I think the point you're making is, how do we strike that balance between preserving our values that we all hold so dearly versus providing a system that people can safely walk around and visit their neighbors and continue to strengthen that small town.
That's exactly right. It, you know, because there's alternates to sidewalks,
right?
And those are pathways. They're common in small communities, and one of the things that this city does not have a pathway overlay,
right?
And therefore, we're not in the game with the rest of the South County and this area as we look at pedestrian pathways that connect to Sun River, that connect to back, you know, the whole big pathway scheme. Mm-hmm. And my feeling is that pathways would fly and provide that connectivity.
I think so.
And they're not as near as expensive as sidewalks and the engineering and all that. So I just...
Well, and I drive down 97 after it snows, and I see what happens to the sidewalks. You know, they're not walkable. You know, when you have a snow that covers the entire sidewalk, or cinders on the bike lanes that, you know, completely bury them. Mm-hmm. Now, there's some real practical reasons to even look at these other treatments too. So I'm fully with you.
Okay.
I was talking to Karen Swirsky Friday, showing her some of these maps because she couldn't make it to the meeting today. And I brought up Huntington Road. You know, we've got this high-speed facility. And her point was, look, you've got the urban growth boundary down Huntington Road, but there's probably some flexibility where there's a way we could probably figure out how to get a pathway on the west side where you don't have the residences, you don't have all the same constraints. But we could probably figure out some way to be flexible and look at that, because she agrees that, you know, sidewalks on both sides of Huntington Road and curb and gutter, it doesn't make sense.
Thanks.
You know?
Well, that being a dead area, really, as far as, you know, that being the Young Ranch, you're not going to get any way into that.
Right.
So the focus is probably looking at pathways down the east side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there space?
Well, you know, there's right of way, and that's yet to be built out.
Yep.
So maybe you need the overlay there for development purposes to bring it out that eventually this is what needs to go in there.
Yeah. Well, on the east side is where the urban area is, so that makes sense if we can do it.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So,
Joe, when we write the code language, which is what's going to help give this plan some teeth, it's fine to have maps, but Steve needs to have the code to help back him up when he's talking to folks. But it's good to provide that flexibility to say, in lieu of traditional sidewalks and bike lanes, developers have the flexibility to come in and establish a comparable pathway system that fits the feel of the neighborhood and the characters that you're trying to...
And that should be always part of the discussion, because people will lock on sidewalks, and I can assure you that this community knows how to lock on.
And that ties in real well with really having this functional design standard. It's not here's the arterial, you have to do this, it has to have a curb gutter side. It's, you know, we want a clear space for people to walk. If it's on one side, that's fine. So we'll figure out how we can do that better.
Okay.
That's a great comment.
Let me just throw in a little bit here. I attended an accessibility seminar on Sunday. And accessibility, you know, knocking down barriers is really important. That's the 14th Amendment. And more and more the courts are finding that if you don't have adequate accessibility in your community, then you're prone to lawsuit. And there was just a brand new ruling on the Fifth Circuit, which is Texas, It's heard by the courts three times. It went to Supreme Court. Supreme Court remanded back without comment. And it pretty much says that whether you have sidewalks in your community and you don't have them, or whether you put them in or you contemplate them, you need to put them in. And if you don't, you're vulnerable to lawsuit. And, you know, a big part of our city is trying to minimize risk. It's just risk management. And so the seniors, more than anybody, are the ones that need sidewalks for accessibility purposes. And no, we don't have to have them everywhere. But we need to be cognizant that we're vulnerable, that we don't have sufficient sidewalks for mobility purposes, and somebody can come in and get it.
I think that, excuse me, Scott, just to comment here on Steve's. Steve and I have talked about this, and the whole idea, you know, the core needs sidewalks.
Right.
You know, there's no doubt about that. Yeah. And we've made effective use of what we've got to present our case that we need this through the STIP plans. That's given. I would say, if I could fall back one quick moment, I was at the COCO meeting yesterday, and Bob Bryant, Region 4 manager, spent about 45 minutes talking about the, I think it's a Senate bill that passed 264, which dictated that ODOT would move forward on creating a simpler system with greater state highway off and on access. And now there's a new bill, 480, I believe it's called, that is actually working through the process of the rules and how this will be done. And for economic development, especially along 97 here, we need to make sure that we are open to easy access for businesses that develop up and down 97. And it's going to be in place at the state level to make that happen. So take a look at this.
Yeah. Scott, you had a comment?
I just had a question. Anybody, if you know, if if in the places that you'd rather do pathways, there's some kind of broad ADA guidelines for pathways as opposed to sidewalks that you can make sure you're covered on?
There are.
Okay.
There
are. Cool. That's all.
I think in large part too, I'm really impressed with the Oregon Ped bike design guide. I think there's some really good information there. I think it touches on a lot of the slopes and surface treatments to meet ADA. I think having that as a reference in the development code would really help, because it talks about the intent. You know, it's not the standard, it's more the intent, which is helpful. So I think the combination of those references, flexibility on the part of the city engineer, city manager, however that works, I think that's going to get us where we need to be. But I think on these maps, what we do need to think about is where we want those pathway overlays, the sidewalks, and the same with the bicycle system. In here, we need to figure out where we want those bicycles to be on separate bicycle lanes, where they can share the pavement because speeds are low, volumes are low, or where those should be a shared trail system. So let's go to figure 4. This is the freight route designation. So I heard a lot of the concerns about trucks on Hampton Road. So what I was thinking is, as we look at where the city's industrial lands are to the east, you know, we really make the First Street, Midsway, Finley Butte connection the truck route. And then ultimately when we extend up to Roslyn Road, that becomes a truck route as well. Does that mean trucks can't drive on other roads? No, it doesn't mean that. It means on these roads, we design the pavement to handle the trucks. We design the corners to handle the turning radii, and we set the expectation that this is where we expect our trucks to use.
Why would they use Finley Butte as a truck route when you're going through a residential neighborhood and parks?
Well, because Finley Butte is part of that arterial system, so it's the loop that we have in the city that connects to the traffic signal, and the traffic signal is where those trucks are going to be able to make those safe left turns onto the highway.
You mean they can't go down to Ridge Reed? I see there's a new proposed highway from...
Not highway, but yeah.
Well, Reed Road to Roslyn along the railroad tracks.
Yeah.
So we're two-lane road, or what is that?
Two-lane. two lanes.
Scott, is there enough room that that could be located on the other side of the railroad tracks? Or are you, your facility's built right up against the railroad right away there?
No, things are set back a little bit. Yeah, there might not be right here.
Well, you'd have to cross the railroad track somewhere.
Well, and the reason I suggest that is because you're on an off-ramps off the highway or scheduled on that side.
Right. I think with the things we need with the DEQ to be out of any kind of a public space or right away, there may not be room. There could be room.
I thought they were planning on using Darlene Way all the way to Roslyn. But that looks like it's going to switch and there's going to be a new route along the railroad tracks.
And it could be Darlene Way. I mean, the only important thing on this map is that there's a connection north-south. And I think last time, when we had looked at that needs map, we had brought up using Darlene Way, and we were told that that wasn't the route you guys wanted to look at. So, I think it's really just the connection. You know, how do we connect the east side? And the east side's a lot less important than the west side.
Joe?
Yeah?
You brought up something really important that made me think of maybe we need just to have a little balloon that says, you know, potential corridor, so people understand that the line is not absolutely perfect.
That's
that way we can move around some of our sewer issues.
Yeah.
And on all these maps, I think even maybe before we go to the chamber meeting on Friday, we should put a note on there that says future alignment to be determined.
Right, right.
We'll put it later date.
Yeah,
great. I think Bill brings up though a point as to whether we need truck routes on both Reed Road and Finley Butte Road.
Right.
They are, I mean, it's part of it's collector, part of it's an arterial, and just because it's an arterial street, Bill doesn't mean necessarily we have to have it designated as a freight route.
True.
So I think one thing we'll just go back and look at is whether we just need Reed Road to be a freight route rather than both Finley Butte and Reed because of the issues you brought up. What's
the
neighborhoods and the
school? Yeah, my only thought with that was if the whole industrial site's developed, do they want to drive all the way north to go all the way back through town on 97? But that's a fair question. I'm with you. I wouldn't want to pass my house.
But you could, you know, look at maybe one of the two, see which is the lesser of two.
Right. There's nothing on Reed now.
Right.
Reed's a great
so why not designate Reed?
Even along Finley Butte, the Finley Park should be 25 miles an hour in the summertime. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they go down there at 55, 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, but then the south has to go all the way through town to get to Reed Road. Or Reed Road.
Finley Butte Freeway.
Something we can take a look at, Joe.
Yeah, I think so.
Joe, one point. And I'm looking at figure one.
Okay.
And where you have the corridor on the east side of the railroad track.
Yeah.
Coming off Reed Road. Is it too late in the game to look at the idea that instead of bringing that all the way up to Roslyn to bring it into Highway 97?
It's not too late. And we're working with Devin right now, trying to look at that wiki up. And some of the concerns that Steve had brought up with ODOT was, you know, we don't have that east-west connection. So I think as part of that, looking at the wiki up, you know, I think we can figure out, are there other options here within that design? Other ways to get, maybe it's extending that bridge a little further so we have another underpass. I don't know.
Beware that anything other than Wikia, where you can have another rail crossing, that's highly problematic.
Yep.
What might happen in the next 20 years rather than what we need to have?
Were you thinking, Ken, a connection that came from there and just tied right in?
No, just come up here and tie this in somewhere like here, and you're already past the river.
My thought of tying into Roslyn too, though, was so that the Gordy's truck stop would have some way to get back to the signal on the highway and deal with the Roslyn issue if it became an issue more so later on. So I think those majority of the maps. There's a lot more in the memo. If you guys have a chance to go to the website and download that, there's some code language in there of some of our recommendations for
traffic study standards. So if someone were to come in and develop, this is what they have to study, this is what they have to prove, this is what they have to look at. Kind of taking what's been in the county to address some of the more urban issues that you guys have about, you know, pedestrian safety, connectivity, easements, access. So there's some text in there about that. There's also some text about access management standards that we have in draft form. Basically say if you're on an arterial, 300 foot spacing, a collector, 100 foot spacing, a local street, it's like 10 feet. So there's some other information in there. If you guys have a chance to go through and look at that, and just give us whatever comments you have, that would be great. Again, this is a first cut straw man that we want these comments. We want to make this better. And this is not going to be, you know, the Kittleson plan. This is going to be the City of Lapine plan. So I want to make sure it reflects what you guys want.
I'm planning to give you some comments on street profiles and on access management standards.
Good.
Separation distances.
Good.
I just haven't had time. I was hoping to do that this weekend and ended up doing other things this weekend.
Well, I think for next steps, we've got the chamber breakfast on Friday, and we'll talk to Steve and Devin and kind of figure out what our strategy there is of what we want to show them, what kind of comments we want to get from them, and what kind of feedback.
Well, we've only got 20 minutes to make our spiel.
It's fine. Okay. Be a lot quicker. The other piece is we're going to be looking to schedule a public workshop sometime in March to have you guys and the general public attend. So we're looking for a venue and a date that we can have that broader discussion. And after that, I think we're going to be looking to, you know, wrap up whatever comments you guys have and come back to you with, you know, here's the recommended draft plan for final comments. So what would help us is if you guys have a chance to look at that overall document, and probably by about March 1st, give us any comments you have or give them to Steve to collect or Devin or myself, however you can get those to us. That'd be great.
Joe, do you want to ask for insights about the public meeting? Anything that has any thoughts?
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. So we have our chamber breakfast Friday, and we'll work on that one. But we're looking for this larger public workshop in March. You know, we want to bring in the public. Any thoughts of how we can try and distill this down and really get good feedback, just in terms of organization, how we present the materials, what we show?
Or folks we should reach out to specifically that can help us get the word out.
We could show a road going right through a school.
That's right. That always gets them.
Everybody in the community.
We want them to come happy, though. You know, we were thinking like cookies. And
I think timing, the time of day, and do you want, I mean, if a lot of people work, maybe they couldn't do it, but evening meetings don't seem to pull them. Saturdays, sometimes people have other plans, things they need to do on their day off. I don't know. We have to ask where we get the best turnout.
Yeah, we'll be flexible all day, evening, whatever works best. So we'll look to you guys to help us figure it out.
And you might want to ask at the chamber.
Yeah.
Breakfast. They have some suggestions, too.
That's a good point.
A little more people attend that than this.
Well, that's why I wanted to get it out of here. And there's 75 people generally at the chamber breakfast.
Or more. Or more. Yeah.
And, you know, we could have a town hall meeting. At least 70 people, I think.
Maybe worth your while.
Well, if you have any thoughts too, just let us know how we can make that as effective as possible. But that's all I have today. So really, a lot of thoughts, and you know,
yes,
now we're looking for comments.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
It looked so short, didn't it?
Yeah.
Where we were on a record-setting pace until that
happened. That's right.
Thanks. We're still doing pretty good. So, on to number 6, discussion concerning public work priorities.
Someone hand out one more thing.
Good, we didn't have enough paper. Thank you.
Now that we're in the space of this society.
Thanks, guys.
So what do you think, Ashley? You gonna come back?
I'll be back.
Okay. What do we do, run everybody off?
Well, we ran her off. You see that? She's there.
Well, we got more maps here, all right.
Yeah, we did.
More.
More. Give me more. Okay, actually, what I've got before you is it's getting to be budget time. And as part of our budget, we need to establish priorities. And very important to the prioritization process, in my mind, is input from the Public Works Committee. And so I've got three different kinds of products here that are all already related that I wanted to share with you for purposes of having you folks give some direction to priorities. And I think the very first one probably should be, there's a packet with pictures. Okay, and I just kind of wanted to go through the packet with pictures. Doug was generous enough to give us some priorities, so as you're thinking about your priorities, you might look at his list of priorities. But then I'd just like to walk through with you some of the different issues that are out there that could be priorities.
Before you go any farther,
yes, sir.
I see you have my email here, and that's very nice of you to do it, but I must apologize for the spelling. I do not believe my secretary used spell check because she's got a whole lot of words in there.
No, I wouldn't sweat small stuff. I think you clearly get your message.
Forgive me for that.
Yeah, well, I didn't
proof it before she sent it.
Yeah, well, the spelling is secondary to the fact that you gave your contribution, and we appreciate it. Well, just, and I think I've got eight or nine, and these all are potentially projects and things that you ought to consider as priorities. The first one is Finley Butte.
And I've heard someone's crossing the street.
Yeah.
That was someone crossing the street.
Yeah. The sirens you want to put up?
Well, there you go. Anyway, but there's no sidewalks on Finley Butte, and you can see the consequences there. We've got, in the first instance, you've got a bicyclist out there transporting their child, and there's no place for them to go but out in the middle of the street. And in the second place, here, I go to Maryland, you see them.
The world runs on paper.
The second picture here is again a Finley Butte, and you've got a gentleman that's out there just by, you know, luck, negotiating.
Yeah.
In his wheelchair, and that's why on some of these major streets anyway, you do need something, whether it's a pathway or a sidewalk, you need to get your people that are not ambulatory out of the roadway, or they're going to get wiped out.
I see ladies pushing strollers right down Finley Butte, you know, mm-hmm. I think Finley Butte's just an accident waiting to happen.
So. I put that in here as a possible priority for sidewalks, or start the dialogue about sidewalks, because I think Finley Butte is probably one of the places, especially if it's going to be a freight route or it's going to be a commercial street or whatever it's going to be.
Yep.
Okay. The next picture here is a connectivity issue with Bymark. Now, folks from the senior center, and I wish I'd had the other picture, I don't know where they went to, but when they want to go to the Bymark, what they do is they cut across from the senior center, and you can see the pathway they cut and they trespass across this property to get to Bymark, because if they go out on Huntington, there's two concrete pathway stubs, but there's no sidewalk along that short section of Huntington from Victory Way down to Bi-Mart store. And in my thought, that would be a priority to put one in there.
There has been a discussion between the senior center and Rob Roy, who is building unit number two, that if he can squeeze it out of his budget, he will provide a asphalt walkway from senior residence number two to the senior center.
Okay.
And then the senior center, if they can get county approval, because the property in the backside there belongs to the county, they would extend it across the back to Bi-Mart.
So back here, okay. Someplace?
Yes, if they can get the approval to do that.
Well, whose land?
Now, it all depends on, as you know, a whole bunch of things.
Who owns this property?
The county does.
Okay.
And that's all just talk.
Yeah. Okay. But is county own the property between Bi-Mart and the senior center?
Yeah.
No. No, but on the back side.
On the back side, the back side of the senior center.
Well, this is the
east side of it.
Right now, people who traverse from Little Deschutes Lodge number one have to walk on Huntington on the road, because there's no place for them to walk in like this little path here. A lot of those people can't get over there because they're in walkers and they've got bad legs. And
And this is just not a good deal.
The ideal situation would be to extend Linda Stephenson did in front of Bi-Mart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All the way down to Crescent Creek. Now, I don't know where the money would come from, but that would be the ideal thing to do right there.
Explain what you mean. You mean that landscaping?
Yes.
Yeah. She put a sidewalk in too.
That's the sidewalk there.
No.
No, she didn't.
Well, that sidewalk has been there. Already there.
Well, yeah. Okay.
But that would be the ideal thing to do. And that goes along with the city beautification program.
Well,
but I don't know who the heck would pay for it.
I think that the city beautification program really needs to have an overlay and a master plan of how we want to do it.
Yeah.
And then Andrew and I have talked about this, and that's really where I think Public Works needs to take the idea. Because you can't, this random beautification is not the way to go.
I agree with that.
Now, the city manager, I agree totally that it, you know, in this core area, we need to have sidewalks. And that from, like he's just described, from Victory Way, is that it, Steve?
Yeah.
For up instance, to Bi-Mart.
Right, there is
that
a
needs
little
to be
short,
a sidewalk.
There's a little short stretch of dirt there. With an entryway off of, if you're at Bi-Mart and there's the driveway, the north driveway, there's a little concrete stub off of it that is in front there next to Huntington, and then it's dirt for a couple hundred feet or 300 feet, and then you have another concrete stub right there at Victory too, and it seems to me that a priority would be putting a sidewalk in there. All the seniors would have a way to get down to Bi-Mart, the post office, Ace Hardware, to wherever. And again, it's an access mobility issue. And the alternative, as you can see, they're trespassing on the backside of this property, and it's dirt and it's clumpy and they can fall down, they can get hurt. And I just don't see that as a good alternative. I think a small stretch of sidewalk out front would be the way to go. The next thing here, it says curb and water issues.
Hey, Steve, any sir, question on how much that might cost?
No, I haven't looked into it yet. I'm going to get a cost estimate on that. But right now, I'm just more than anything, I'm trying to focus in on what you folks think are the priorities. Both pictorially, I've just got a whole bunch of different things here that show priorities. So you can tell me what you think the priorities are. I'm going to be doing the same thing with the council and the Planning and Zoning Commission. This next one here, this is the driveway entrance into the library and into the park and into the event center. And you've got this big dirt thing that extends through the driveway, offsets the driveway, and they've got gas lines and water and everything else, all that needs to be relocated so that this driveway is fully accessible. It's a little thing, but it's a big thing. And then I think the next one I'm showing you too, there's this funky curb, and then there is this water meter, and I can do a gas line in there, and a hydrant. But that probably all needs to be relocated. Now this next picture is just, it shows sidewalk there that's in front of Ray's Food Store on 3rd. There's a couple pictures of it. And as you can see, it's just totally disintegrated. And possibly that's something that needs to be improved. I'm showing you big things and little things based on whatever our piggy bank is. The next picture is the light that's out in front of the post office frequently. And the thought was that either we run a line down over to the swale area that's in front of the post office, or in front of the fire station, and deposit this water there,
put a swale.
Or instead, we talk to whoever the owner is and tear out these little evergreen shrubs, put a swale area in there, and make it attractive, and put the water there. But that's one of two really bad locations for drainage in our city. The next picture, it shows just how bad it is. I mean, you talk about accessibility. There's a driveway there someplace underneath that lake, or a sidewalk someplace underneath that lake, but people can't traverse. So even if we put that sidewalk that I proposed in from Victory to the Bi-Mart, and they cross the street, well, they can't go much further because they, you know, you have this real water issue. So I show three or four pictures of it as a possible property for the intention.
Steve?
Yes, sir.
What about raising the level, I mean, as part of doing this, raising that whole level, because it looks like it's just sort of and you raise the level of the street, you raise the level of the sidewalks.
You then end up ponding on the other side.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is if you...
Well, no, I'm not saying that just do that as the sole remedy. I'm talking about doing the swale collection or moving it down to 1st and Huntington in that, I don't know if that swale at the fire station would, or fire department would handle it, but as part of it, you know, what, Steve?
I'm listening.
No, I'm saying,
about,
is that,
about,
is that
again, you know, where
feasible?
I'm looking, the thing is, if you rebuild the roadway, you're going to have a big cost. And so I'm just thinking, and I agree with you, there's probably some sloping with the roadway that lends itself to capturing all this water. But, you know, we're looking for what can we afford with our piggy bank.
Okay.
And that's it. I want simply to get this water distributed someplace and then worry later about the causal agents, the road, the sloping, you know, because it probably didn't have a good crown.
One of the things that I'd like to have the Public Works Board aware of, when you talk about this kind of repair work, there is a very large fund in the state of Oregon called school safety. It involves school safety and movement within the city, and it has something to do with connectivity. But there is money out there just for this, and this whole area is related to the traffic that comes out of the high school and other places down through that area. So, one of the things is when we start talking about money, we can't just be thinking about our little piggy bank, because I guarantee you it's not going anywhere. If you rely on our piggy bank, it's not going anywhere.
we need to be looking at those state funds, you know, and they're tied to bicycle. You know, you heard the word multimodal. That is probably the biggest word going around for the last couple of years and in the future. So we need to be looking at that kind of money. We're better going to get this done by looking at that kind of money and doing the applications for those kinds of grants.
Okay, the next set, there's a few pictures here in front of the, this is in front of the
bank. U.S. Bank.
The U.S. Bank. And again, what this is, more than anything, is that when they went to pour this concrete, clearly they had too much water that was floating on top. And when you have that, then you have this granular disintegration. Yep. And that's what's causing this, you know. And one, so there's really two issues here. There's the issues of this sidewalk, this public sidewalk, is disintegrating, and it's gonna cause conflict. People are gonna trip and fall and stuff.
Maybe we ought to have an ordinance.
Well, and the second thing is that we need to have some standard, mm-hmm, that say, you know, when you pour concrete, you know, it's inspected for its integrity so that you don't get this. You know, I'm not seeing this so much as a priority. I just want to call your attention. If we're going to have sidewalks, we got to have some standards for, right, sidewalks, or we can end up with this really nasty stuff.
Well, and it's all over town. Subdivisions everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we need to have good sidewalk standards, and people just can't be left to their own devices to go pour, because, you know, depending on when you pour concrete, you get these kind of outcomes. We have a weather regime here that's a very short construction period. You have to work within it. Then the next one here is just down the street here on Huntington, the start of Huntington. And as you can see, there's a little section of sidewalk missing there too. So again, we can't be putting sidewalks in all over town, but we might. Yes.
Stephen, looking at that picture,
uh-huh,
and this is a great picture, really, and it really describes the whole town. Is that fence on? Where's the right of way there?
Well, the right of way probably is on the back side of the fence. Fence is probably in the public right of way. And again, that's why I'm looking at a fencing center at some point, so that you just can't go out and put fences on public rights of way. You got to have a permit to put a fence up. It doesn't have to cost anything for the permit, but it just says, you know, we need to see a drawing, and then we need to know with some degree of certainty that you're not putting your fence on public right of way.
Why is that transformer thing sitting there?
That's a foam pedestal.
Oh. But if you look at the picture, that sidewalk, go at the left end of the picture where the sidewalk ends, there's a post there and then there's a fence. The sidewalk that's there would fit right between those two pieces.
Yeah, and the other thing is, in terms of accessibility, you know, if we wanted to line up that sidewalk, you can see that you've got that foam pedestal,
yeah,
right in the middle of the sidewalk alignment. Right. And again, that just shows you that we don't have, there's very little standards any place around town about where you put things and how you put them.
You know, the humor side of this is that, And I'm not disparaging the county, because they've turned into great partners, and times have changed since we've become a city. But they didn't spend any money down here.
Nope.
They didn't look here. They had this view of about 270 degrees. And it would take in that area, swing back around, and get down to about some river. And the pine was in that sort of that cone there that didn't get looked at.
Cone of silence.
You got to do what you wanted to. And as late as
within the last 6 months, we've seen an addition to a house right here in town that wasn't permitted. But that's, Steve speaks to these standards, and that's what's going to come out of your committee. This will all get corrected over time, but see, these are glaring. I mean, it supports the whole idea by them being so obvious.
Right.
So
that we have to come up with a plan.
Yeah.
Now these next pictures, this is Ken's favorite bass fishing area here.
They're
in Huntington.
Oh, yeah.
And for a long time we thought about fixing this, but we thought instead we just have little rafts. We just put little rafts along the sidewalk there, and then you could raft.
You can rent them out.
We got a fishing derby coming up.
And actually, that could be our first a tourist attraction of the season. You know, flood this area,
plant a few
throw a few a little goldfish in there, and bring the kids in for a kids derby.
There you go.
Someday I'll wait to see a guy in a rowboat going across that intersection.
Steve, let me inject here real quick.
Sure.
Right on this corner where you see the white line, the stop line on the left side of the picture. We have had for years, as we have in other places, a pothole there that every year sometimes, you know, if this water would fill in under, you know. And I got approached by, I think it's Zach Russell, who has a hot patch machine that really melts the asphalt.
Yep.
And then you put asphalt in and they remelt it and it blends. If you go down there, just take a look. If you go down there and I almost I challenge you to find where it got fixed. And it's right at that little white line, and it's about a 4 foot patch. I have spoke to and what I did was I had George and Peter come out and watch that job be done, because one, I was trying to foster the county using that service here in the Pine, versus them sending a crew out, let's take in front of the post office, and several other places, and patching it 4 or 5 times. And we all know the one down on Burgess, as you come off of 97, they patch that about 3 times a year with coal patch. And so how do we place emphasis on, I mean, it's county's responsibility to fix these patches. So I'd like to see us try to sell the county on using a hot patch and saving themselves money.
Probably do it on money saving.
That's
they want to save every bit that they can at the county level, which is what we'd want to do too. But if you pitch it that way,
right,
it might go across.
But now you know about the availability of something that will last, and that was done early last year, and there's no pothole there since.
It's done right. It'll last a long time.
Yeah.
Well, I look at this, and I think the city ought to be, or county, looking at this Third Street intersection and trying to acquire a strip of land right here where they can do a bioswale and get the water off. Because I think that's the only way you're going to do it is.
I think Steve's working on it.
Yeah, I'm working on it. No, George tells me, George has kind of got 3 plans. George Colt's got 3 plans for fixing this water issue. One would pump it down to that swale that's there in front of the fire station. He's looking at maybe transporting it westward along 3rd and figuring out some way to put it there. But there's two or three issues that really are important here to address. One is just the accessibility. There's no ability to walk across the street and when you have these flooding conditions. The second is, as people drive down Third here, and Third gets a lot of traffic, is that you're going to have, because people swerve around the water, you're going to get an accident. It's an accident just waiting to happen. The third thing, it doesn't seem like a big thing, but it could be a big thing, and that is when the water dams up, it drains onto this property, and so you have stormwater trespassing on these people's property. It's called adverse possession, and they could come back and say, you know, you've impacted our ability to do on our property what we need to do because you've allowed your stormwater to come onto our property, and public roads are intended not to have the stormwater trespass any more so than this development here. Its stormwater from its impervious services should trespass into our roadways. So we truly need, I'd say if there was an issue in our city that needs to be reconciled, number one, it's probably this one here. It's really bad.
On Third.
And I gotta tell you, the post office is right behind.
Yeah. I think with the post office, you mentioned it, is to put a drain there and put a pipe along right to the two Ace. To drain the stair, connect in, and go into the fire, go into that swell by the fire department.
Now, Scott goes out there as time allows and pumps the water out of Third and Ninth. And he's got a pumper truck and he's got a septic truck. And in the wintertime, he can only use the pumper truck, which holds 1,000 gallons, so it takes about 12 hours to get rid of all this water. In the summertime, you can use the septic truck, which holds 4,500 gallons, and do it much quicker. And the reason he can't use the septic tank, and correct me if I'm wrong, in the wintertime, is they've got all of those cinders down, and so he sucks them up, and they play havoc with his lagoon system, so he can't have them in there. Mm-hmm. And so when the streets are clean and it's just water, then he can use it. In the wintertime, when there's all those cinders down, he can't use it. So he's impaired in his ability to go out on behalf of the city and really drain that as often as it should be drained, because it takes a couple people about a day and a half to do that. And that really takes away from other stuff. But nonetheless, it needs to be done, and we do it.
Is there a way that you could create a collector point where you could just hook up the truck to it and have it screened and whatnot, so you pull the water off the top instead of off the bottom?
Maybe so, but really the whole issue is just we need to the water system that deals with it. It didn't. Yeah, when we had like the fall rains, I could use all of our pump trucks, but the ones that we use to pump septic tanks, I can't pour that out on the ground. There's still residue in those trucks of where it was last. The Vactor truck, I can go dump that on the ground somewhere, but the cinders, they don't come out of the truck well. When they do come out at our dump, they end up in the lagoon, and it's just a bad scene.
Scott, I just explore the idea that Tom was talking about, you know, having a connector sitting there that would screen that.
Some kind of a catch basin.
Some kind of catch basin that you can hook your septic truck to that would prevent that gravel from coming up into the.
The county's been out surveying on this. Last week.
Yeah, George would like to cure this.
They're really in the works of something that hopefully will deal with this before it's an issue.
Yeah, we had this trouble at first in Huntington, as you know, but it's pretty well been cured. The county came out with the help of Scott, and they undid the drains were plugged up. And so they unplugged them, and now the water is pretty well dispersed.
Good.
It was as bad for a while
is your senior and third.
You can put the same kind of system in the third if you can find a place to put the water, and it'll work perfectly as long as it's maintained. It's a little maintenance here and there, and that'll take care of it.
Yeah.
It works great.
So that's the first of the priorities. The second is, you notice that we went through this elaboration last year where to put streetlights. And my thought was we'd come up with six new streetlight places for next year. And if you wanted to know where the streetlights were this year, so you know where to come up with six next year, I've got this email back and forth between Tom and myself. And the bottom here, it identifies where those eight were going to go this year. And so you just put dots on them, and then you see what dots are left. And then if you just come up with six more dots, I'd be appreciative.
You wait one more year, we can just do them all in one year.
Well, and that's true, too. And then thirdly, this is an email that I sent out about two or three weeks ago, and it updated. There's a February 11th. It's possible public priorities, and there's about 30 of them here. And so what I'd ask you folks to do is between the pictures, the list of 30, and the streetlight map, give some guidance to where, it's not for me, it's for our budget committee, what you think should be done. And we can either do it formally or we can do it informally, but, I'd have you pick somewhere between 5 and 10 things that you just think are must do with respect to public priorities, and offer them up. Okay.
Why don't we just mark these and turn them into you?
Why don't you just mark the pictures? And or mark up the pictures too. You could just put a check mark on the pictures, say this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then maybe 5 things on that priority list, and then your 6 preferred street level locations. And that would be really super helpful. Because I just know that when the budget committee gets together and the mayor's on the budget committee, it's just going to be all fisticuffs. Unless, of course, they have some direction before they get in.
It definitely will help the budget committee move faster through it.
Priorities.
All right, and then finally, I think there's only one more item on our agenda, and that is just...
Maybe these should have been numbered rather than a dot in front of them. These.
Well, one of the reasons I did that was not purposely put the dots there so as not to leave any impression that one was more important than the other, that any of these could be the number one. I start putting numbers by them, and then psychologically people say, oh, well, yeah, that's 1, 2, 3, I agree.
We could go ABC.
Well, we could.
But that's just—it's easier for us to select and tell you rather than.
I don't want this
the
to be
fourth
easy.
Dot down.
I don't want this to be easy for you. I want you to really struggle with this.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Took me about 15 minutes.
You want to do that now, or do you want to do it?
Well, why don't we? You want to turn them in before we leave today?
I got mine done.
I'm done.
And you know, top five, or you have a problem if we go further than that?
No, again, we're just looking for some guidance. I mean, it's real easy for the budget committee, and I'm not saying this will happen, to get bogged down because there's so many different considerations.
And it's just really helpful to help them. I mean, you folks, especially with anything public works related, which about half these priorities are, you're in the driver's seat. You should know and say to these folks, this is what we think is the most important public works project. Yes, sir.
Absolutely true. He said it straight. Steve.
Yes, sir.
One of the things that I've thought about for a long time, and I noticed you'll all notice here in La Pine, is we really don't have that collection of signs coming into town, inside of town, and out.
And I've got it on here on the list. Let me find it for you, and let me just describe it a little bit, because I don't know if it's a priority or it's a pet peeve, but we're disrespected as a community every which way. For instance, the first sign that you have coming north on 97 that identifies a pine is 16 miles down the road, and it's covered by a ponderosa pine. You can hardly see it. Okay, so you really don't have any forewarning that the city's coming up so as to get excited about our presence. So that's one issue. Likewise, as you're coming south, you don't have very much signage, and the signage is all incorrect. For instance, there's a sign by Sun River that says La Pine 14 miles. So I clocked it the other day. It's actually 10. You know, so they're putting us a lot further away from Bend than we really are. We're really 24 miles from Bend. And yet everything I see is 28 or 30, you know, because somebody didn't do a good clocking. Or maybe our boundary is finally formalized north and they didn't know that before. Or when I'm coming down Burgess and I intersect 97, there's a sign that says, La Pine, 2 miles this way.
You're already in La Pine.
And I'm in La Pine.
Yeah.
And then as I'm coming down Huntington, I get almost to the veterinarian place and it says La Pine. Well, the doggone it, that sign needs to be up north of Burgess Road on Huntington. We have all these signs all over the place that misidentify us or leave wrong impressions or don't leave impressions at all. And so I put it on here someplace.
We have signs, they just need to be relocated.
They just need to be where they need to be.
And there needs to be a lot of others. I mean,
well, yeah, but I mean, maybe, you got some, it's not going to cost anything to make the signs or in, just the cost of labor of moving it.
It's a sixth bullet on the second page. It says, signage installation or modification. For example, placement of more refined signs along 97 for location purposes, or relocating signs that are improperly placed and or need updating, or an installation of new signs where needed. The other thing is the population. It says 1,585, but we're up to about 1,700 people. What would it cost us to take that sign down and put 1,700 up?
You have to call over that.
Well, I think the number is 1,654, but...
No, I think it's 1,670, actually, and I'm just sneaking it up 1,700. You know, but again...
Finding ahead, but you're
if
right.
If you put it at 1,700, I mean, it helps market and promote our city psychologically 1,700 more than 1,585. And, you know, we put it up, who's going to take it out? You know? I mean, the Posse Comic House will watch that sign for us.
I think there are two processes in getting signs. When you're dealing with ODOT signs, there's a process, and when you're dealing with business signs, for instance, you come into a city and you see these signs that says McDonald's, Big Mac, you know, all of these motels and everything on there. We don't have any of those. Or we don't have the sign that says Healthco Foods that way. And granted, that I don't know if that's the responsibility of the business to claw into a process to get that done or not. But if it is, then the city needs to make it a simple process, with some kind of form they can fill out, and we understand the process and it gets taken care of, because you know the number of vehicles that go through this town. People only have the signs to really pick out some reason to stop.
Yeah, we just want to promote ourselves.
Yeah.
And we got almost 14,000 cars a day coming through. I mean, even that's wrong. I mean, I see a number says 9,600. Well, no, it's almost 14,000. There are several hours a day, I think from 8 to 6, where there's 1,000 vehicles an hour on 97. I mean, we get a lot of people there. We just need to capture their interest, and one of the ways was signage. And hell, if we can put Ashton Eaton signs out on our roadway, then we ought to be able to put any other kind of sign out there too. We figured out how to do it. We just need to continue down that path.
The only thing, if I remember right, when you're putting a sign along, like 97 here, you have to meet ODOT standards.
Right.
That's the only thing. If it's a business sign, I'm assuming that the business pays for it. But as far as Lapine signs, I don't know if the city would have to pay to have them changed for population. But ODOT, we got them through ODOT, is what we did.
And my point really was a case of we need to figure out what the process is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once you know what the process is, you can move forward of doing something, and you can, and I mean, if we're talking about doing something like this, and it's a priority, and we're going to have to spend $12,000 over the whole project,
right,
then a piece of that or some part of that has to be in the budget, you know. And is it a priority? I think it's a significant priority.
We bought these signs here for $75 each, and the post, I don't know what we're going to pay for the post, but let's say we're going to pay $20 or $30, so maybe $100 a sign. And just what I was enumerating is probably in signs, so $1,500, we can probably cure some of the sign stuff this year, and if not this year, then next year.
Right.
Good heavens, we need at least, I mean, for instance, when I'm up here in Bend, I'm seeing signs that say Klamath Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, well, why not Lapine? Why Klamath Falls? And then I'm thinking in reverse. Well, if I'm just leaving Klamath Falls, why don't I see signs that say Lapine?
Yeah.
And Steve can speak to this. I went to California, and it's been bugging me for a long time, but I went to California. And on my way back, I, at every mileage sign that says Bend,
yeah,
Klamath Falls, you know.
Yeah, we don't exist.
And we don't. I mean, I wrote down the mileage of the signs and what the signs said, and I gave them to Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he said, we're left off the map.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's probably because Lapine didn't exist as a city when the signs were installed.
And that's a valid point.
Yeah.
But we're here in Fall Falls. We're in full force now, and we need to make our presence known, and we need bragging rights.
On Highway 20, going over the Sandingham, you don't see Sisters load, it says Bend. You don't see Sisters on it. How many miles to Sisters? Coming back from Albany or somewhere like that, you know, it doesn't tell you, it says Bend 100 miles, but it doesn't say Sisters. So that's why I'm saying, why would they put Lapine if it does say Bend on 97?
It may not be important to those Sisters.
Well, maybe Sisters should do what we're discussing and have their name put on there too. How many miles is it to Sisters rather than Ben?
It just hasn't, yeah. I would say it hasn't caught anybody's attention. But everybody knows where Sisters is.
Yeah. Find out.
And they know what Sisters is.
Yeah.
And they know where to get there, how to get there and all of that, because they are a destination resort in a sense. Lapine is a wide place in the road.
Isn't there a sign, aren't there signs that's on 97 that says how many miles to Chemult?
There are.
Yeah, there
There's
are.
A couple
8
of
miles
signs.
To Chemult.
Yeah.
I've seen them.
Yeah.
Chemult.
I mean, Chemult has better starring status.
I've seen them on 97. How many miles to Chemult?
That ain't right.
It may be related to the fact that it's a railhead.
That too. Yeah.
I mean, you know, ODOT could have recognized the fact that people need to know how to get to Chemult. because it's a Amtrak railing.
Steve, sir. I think you need to get a hold of the guy that's in charge of ODOT and Bend as far as where to go for signs.
Oh, Tim McGinnis, our local guide.
Yeah.
I've talked to him.
Yeah.
He's real receptive. He says, Steve, you just simply need to get a permit.
Yeah.
Tell us where you want to put them. We can install them or you can install them.
And also the other side, like you're talking about further down the road.
Yes.
Lafine's so many miles, that kind of, see where you're going with that.
Right outside of San Diego, we put the first one. We worked our way up there.
950 miles to Lafine.
You want to ask them to do 8 of these, is that it?
That'd be fine.
I did 10.
Part of the issue might also be
that
we have two assets here. Area Commission of Transportation. We have South Central, and they have their own yard in Chemul. They have a yard in Chemul, and then you come up here somewhere where Tim's McGinnis's area stops, but it starts here somewhere south of Lapine, and goes
Central Yard
Act.
You know that yard?
Well, no, it starts south of Lapine.
It's
Central Oregon Area Commission of Transportation.
No.
I think that there's three of them in Region 4.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
South Central, Central, and North. Lower John Bend. Right.
Thank you very much.
You know, on that list, there was an emergency management plan. And there is a group that meets with the state Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock at the state roadway place up here. There's an emergency management group has been formed for Lafine. Just thought I'd throw that out. If you want them to do tell us what they're doing when that comes up.
Well, again, there's always, and I think just because for a long time we weren't a city, and so people just decided that they had to get together.
Well, they've been working with the fire department for years and years for emergency. In fact, they've got a communication center that's dedicated to Lapine. Did you know that?
Yes.
And then, you know, they got it with state radio. In fact, FEMA funded it. This unit.
There is that group. And they're associated with the fire department, you know?
And the state, and with FEMA, and with the county, So anyway, there is a group that is working on an emergency plan for Lapine, South County.
So is the city.
And just so you know, we've had meetings, emergency planning meetings.
Right.
And one of the things I'd like to do this next year, I think it's real important, is to have an emergency plan. You know, and again, when I was in this class here on Sunday, we talked about barriers. An emergency management plan really needs to address seniors' needs, and I haven't really given it as much thought as I need to until I heard all this. But you know, 50% of the people live here are 55 years and older. So there is a lot of need to focus our energy on senior needs and any impediments to senior needs, be it a sidewalk that's missing or, you know, a management plan that really doesn't attend to their needs. So there's just so much. So we'll get there.
Okay.
All right.
So I don't know if this is part of five or not, but you have the...
No.
Water rate studies, that just for our information to digest.
Right, you had asked, if someone had asked, and I think more than one had asked, at the rate study that Chris Markle provided you last month, that you could have the PowerPoint presentation along with.
Okay.
So we're just providing that for you. Now that presentation will be before the council, I believe sometime in early March. We're going to do it 27th, but it's just coming. And it's coming up. And that's important to our rate, to our budget too, is to understand, what the costs are, because if we need to increase our costs, then I'm going to ask the budget committee to consider that as part of the budgeting process.
Are we going to have any input on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Will we have time before the council meets on this?
The council is going to meet several times. The budget committee is going to meet like 8 times between now and August.
Okay, so it's August.
5 times, maybe several times, we'll have the dates out, and certainly we want as much public input. And but if there's a number one thing that we do in the city, it's set the budget. Right? Doesn't mean we'll live within it, but we need to set it.
And that will be finally discussed and decided on in August, so we have some time to do homework and.
Actually, by May, you want to have your budget pretty well in alignment. There's things that we have to do throughout the year with different public agencies, but you pretty much want to have your budget in place by May sometime, because you adopt it 1st of July.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Steve?
Sir?
Who put this together besides Chris? Scott, do you have anything to do with this?
I spoke with him a little bit on where we were at with usage. Ashley probably had the most time with him on meter readings, billings, and all that sort of stuff.
Let me tell you, this document is really good. This is very informative. Most importantly, very easy to read and understand. You should be complimented.
Well, I had no hand in making the paper.
Whoever put this together did a really good job, and this is a real valuable piece of paper.
Terrific.
It really is.
Chris Marco compiled that whole thing on his own.
Yeah, he did a great job, and it's I don't know how much he charges, but it's going to work the money.
Thank you.
Yeah, I see.
Thank you.
Okay, well, the only other thing that I'll mention is Mr. Carpenter has resigned. He's provided his resignation, and I believe he's an innie.
He's an innie.
Okay. It's a $5 word, Mayor. He's 11 Lapine.
Versus an outie?
Yeah. There you
and
go.
Audit. We're catchy. He's learning the public works lingo. I never.
Are you getting any response to what you put
in the
papers?
Have we advertised for it?
Yes.
No, I haven't advertised for it yet.
So we're going to advertise here. We haven't advertised, but we do. And then I believe that Jane was.
She's an outie.
She's an outie,
and
but
we
she's
want
next
her bad,
in line.
Your Honor.
So.
Your Honorable Mayor.
So next time we have an outie. Then she's in line for an outing.
We couldn't use her in the meantime to find another innie?
I think it's appropriate to give the opportunity for a significant, a reasonable period of time.
For an innie to show up?
For an innie, yeah.
And if we don't get any innies?
Here's
available, can we appoint Jane for a year to fill that position?
No. What we'd have to do is we'd have to amend our public works document that tells you how you do business. But certainly we could do that. We could just get rid of, just simply say we need to have 6 or 8 people these time periods, but they don't have to be innies routed. Because I think as it stands now, you need to have 4 innies and 3 outies.
Right.
Well, I have no idea.
I think it speaks to the fact that we're a city, and this was all drawn out a long time ago about, having a counselor on the council that represented the community. There was a great deal of dialogue that went through all of that, and the idea is to, it's for the city. The majority of the board or to be people within the city.
Innies.
Be an innie. So I would find difficulty in wanting to go any other way.
I think some of the misconception was that somebody from the outside of the city would want to have their own agenda as to what is good for the city. Now, Doug knows, I've been from the start on this thing, and I won't work for the city. Even though I live 4 miles out, because I come through this city.
There was a long response.
Right.
And it was decided by the majority that all committees would be one person more resident than non-resident. Yeah. We should keep it that way.
I have somebody in mind.
Good.
That Scott Carr, who was here at last month's meeting, he retired from water and sewer, some main city here in Oregon.
And I've talked to him.
Okay.
Wasn't he, didn't he have
He's got a commitment, a traveling commitment that he, that wouldn't work right now. But he'd be an extremely valuable addition to the committee.
He came around and did a tour of all of our water and sewer facilities 2 weeks ago or something. He really has a lot of interest.
Is he an Audi or any?
He's an in.
Wow.
So there you go. I'll see you. Well, that's all I had, folks. There's the comment period now.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
One for Steve. I understand you're in process of looking to hire a handyman.
Right.
What is this handyman going to do?
Going to assist me in any and all things I need assistance with. In part, they're going to be the code enforcement person, about half time. And the other half, just do things like shepherd this improvement out here in front of the city hall would be an example. Put up signs, you know, where they need to be put up. I mean, help with, you know, plans.
That's a part-time position.
It's 20 hours a week.
It has nothing to do with helping the sewer department, or is
yes,
that another
Yes, it is.
One?
In part, it is. It's I wrote the job description so that the person has a reporting relationship to Scott and to me.
And then how many hours of that part-time would be designated to code enforcement?
Well, again, it would just depend on how much time code enforcement needed. Again, I have to work within the budget. I think what we did last year, if you recall, one of our priorities was to approve a code enforcement officer that would work 10 hours a week. So, kind of in my mind, this person would work half-time at code enforcement.
That's a good idea. Now I have a question for Scott. The hay field over here, what can that be used for? I mean, I've heard all kinds of stories that since it's been sprayed with treated water that can't be used for anything.
They sell the hay.
Huh?
They used to sell the hay.
Don't get into that.
You mean when we get the new property and move our irrigation outside, what can we do with that then?
Yeah, that whole.
I don't think there's any environmental constraints to it. I think.
And that is officially city property, right?
Well, yeah. That's almost. It's getting there. With by August 1st, it'll be city property.
Okay. From the existing from the railroad tracks all the way to all the way down to that one house.
Approximately 750 acres.
It's a very valuable piece of property.
Oh, it is. And right now, it's kind of constrained in that it can only be used for sewer related purposes. But I think at some point we'll go back and knock on the door and say, you know, it's our land after all, you gave it to us, and can we widen its scope of use?
And that could be part of an issue where our hay field is now, as that was a BLM transfer under the Recreation and Public Purpose Act as well. So I'm not sure we could build townhomes in there.
Now, is it true that you can no longer spray treated water in that hay field?
No, we're still going to.
You can still, DEQ said you can still do that?
Absolutely. They'd like us to move off of it as soon as that new property gets transferred, but there's a process to all that.
And why is that?
Because of the shallow groundwater. There's groundwater about 6 feet under that field.
Have they figured out what the groundwater is on the new section?
We've done some tests, like push probe holes out there, and found wet sand at 50 feet in one area and nothing in any of the other eight other locations.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah. But you just got to know as we evolve that that 750 acres is going to be valuable.
Boy, that's
at least 4 miles of blood.
This wasn't the patch that was going to be a airfield at one time, is it?
I don't know, but you know, someone brought to my attention the other day that maybe that would be a good place for an airfield. I don't know if it would or not. I wasn't part of all that discussion that you had before about airfield.
You might want to talk to Jim about that.
The original place where they were going to, you were talking about putting an airfield in, was between the railroad tracks and Darling Way. That's 2 miles up from Roslyn to Reed Road. It's exactly 2 miles. But we wouldn't, for airport, you wouldn't need that much. 1 mile one way, that's what they got in LA.
So between Darling?
Between Darling Way and the railroad tracks.
How big is Sun River?
Like they're 1,500 feet.
Yeah, it's not very big.
Yeah, it's not very big.
What's that?
Sun River Airport's length. It's about 1,500 feet.
How long is that one in Sisters?
And where?
Sisters.
I think it's longer.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I haven't been to that one.
It's 5,200 feet.
It's a nice one.
It's big. Yes.
Yeah. I think it's 5,200 feet.
It's a long
one. Sun River?
Absolutely.
I
don't know about that.
I
have to go get my book at home.
Yeah.
And see.
But 5,200 feet is in this area is not very much. The biggest they can't bring the level or the size of aircraft in there that they would like to. And that in itself would enhances. Us having a larger airport down here.
Yep.
But Sun River is able to bring in corporate jets. Their runway is long enough for that.
Yeah, but they're packed.
Yeah.
We have a guaranteed market coming in out of Sun River that was.
Right, no, I'm just saying that's how long their runway is. It's good enough for that.
But this is going to sound stupid, but if that road gets realigned, you know, so that Darling Way is not used, Darling Way is a pretty straight shot. It could be used as a. Enhanced for a runway and
5,400 feet.
It's 5,400 feet of Sun River.
5,400?
Yeah.
Okay.
Steve.
And their runway is not that good. It's in bad shape the last time I was there.
Didn't we talk one time about you did some work in one of your previous lives to do an overlay for an airport?
Yeah, at City of Caldwell, I put in. Actually, it's a two-tiered overlay, zoning overlay, that more than anything protects the airport. Caldwell's got a good airport. Caldwell's just right outside of Boise, and they've got a very excellent airport there. And it's excellent because they took action very early on to say, you know, because interestingly, in the last 10 years, 7,000 airports in the United States have gone away. Because no one thought about protecting them from growth and development. And it doesn't take very much. You just need to have some building that is at a height that impedes the very different conical spaces that they need to have, and then you can't have it. So if you're going to have one, you need to have it protected so that anything that happens within it, it is at the benefit of the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, one of the things we did in Caldwell is we put in additional sounding requirements to building houses within a certain distance of there so that the inside decibel level went to what was acceptable, which meant a whole different building standard for the buildings. And then we had all these height restrictions. And if we ever go to do an airport, the first thing we do is we're going to drag out Caldwell's overlay and have us take a look at it.
Well, one of the things that we did this before we become a city, if you go to the south end of Reed Road there, that's all industrial. You don't have to worry about the noise. North of that, we would only use about half of that length, and you can have a pattern so it wouldn't go over
was in various states.
Yeah, they did a flybys, remember?
And nobody heard us.
Right.
People were asked, did you hear the jet go by? Nobody heard it.
Let me ask you this. I've had several people tell me that there's an old abandoned airport down here.
You can't use it. Water table's too high.
Oh, is that what the issue is?
And it, right now, you wouldn't want to land in it because there's trees right going down the middle of it.
Well, I figured there were probably was abandoned the way trees grow around there. But it's a water table issue.
Yeah, it's a water table issue is what it is.
Place all those people from Sun River.
Brody has an airport.
We don't need we need two. Or three.
Define international.
I like it. I'll start putting the signs up right now.
We can have a big picture out there of the mayor when they land who says, welcome to La Plaine.
I like that.
By the time that would ever get built,
you're right.
I will either know that I've gone through the pearly gates or
or going the other way.
We're helping right behind you.
I'm going to be behind you.
Any other public comments for the good of the order? Staff comments?
I said way too much.
Yeah. I make a motion that we close the meeting.
I will second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? You'll be shot.
Shot. Ordered.
How many times has Arnold been in the last year? No, you know what happened? I got sick real bad.
Yeah.
Then I come out of it,
day.
And then I went down.
Actually, how do you know how many times Arnold's been here? He's been here a week. Mostly, yes.
No. He comes a lot. He just had a knee surgery. That's why he's out. But he called me at least a week ago.
Was it?
I mean, he gave a pretty good notice that he wasn't going to be here. He had surgery. He was recuperating as well as he thought.
He's not doing it. I can't hardly walk. I'm telling you. The story. He had some of that
I know. It's like 5% for the whole thing.
Well, my brother-in-law said that was a great thing to give for my father-in-law. My father-in-law didn't want to take me on the airplane.
You work in France. You don't want to go
Thanks for your input.
Oh, you're welcome.
Definitely right there.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
I'm driving around town. I got another meeting at 1:30. We changed that meeting because the meeting starts at 7:30.
A 7:30 breakfast. You want to get a.
I'm trying to get a.
You're going to get there early, huh?
Yeah. Well,
it's going to be able to
survive. They
have a different mindset now.
The only reason is that they get that money from the seals.
Of course, the city can't afford to be a sponsor for $5,000.
They can't do it. Because we sent out a survey
asking
people what, you know, what would they prefer. The city came in number one. So that's what we went for. Now, you can probably go for an airport because then the city would decide.
And probably you aren't.
We got that 750.
But it'd be better if they...
750 acres. Seems to me that we have a lot of land available for...
Maybe that's what they need to do.
And there's... I don't remember if I got the paperwork at home or if I turned it into the city on the airport. One of the two has
it.
I got a box at home with a whole bunch of stuff in it, which I'll check through and see if it's there. If it's there, I'll give it to the city. But I think I turned it into the Luana when she was working.
That'd be the best of all.
The old city hall.
Okay. I don't know if I put that on here.
If you have over here.
I need to get you some coffee.
Hey,
I don't know if you want to turn that off.
Oh, yeah, thank you.